All right, then. 5 p.m. Friday, time for the How Music Changed series of American Radio.
Double happy hour.
That's right. 90.3 WHBC, WHBC HD. Triple happy hour if you count the fact that it is now time for us to continue our series dedicated to the history of the music of Pink Floyd. Today is part 8, which might sound unusual to the people who are listening to it live. They're going to say, what happened to part 7? Because last week we just did part 6, and that's true. We are dropping some parts exclusively into the website for the simple reason that we've already covered the music for part 7 on our Wednesday series. So what would have been done live now would have been us covering the Syd Barrett album, The Madcap Laughs. Since we've already covered that album about a number of years ago, I thought it perfect for us to just take that, put it in its place on the website, and we move on from there rather than me being redundant. So if you're interested, please go to AmericanHitNetwork.com and pick up on the parts of the series that are not going to be live on the radio on Fridays. We're going to continue doing this as we go forward with albums like Dark Side of the Moon and such. So there will be a lot of other shows that we will be like skipping past, but they will be available on the website in the How Music Changed part of our website for the Pink Floyd series, all in order. So it should be nice and easy if you want to pick up on them. So if you might want to hear part 7, go right to the website and there it is. Meanwhile, here's part 8. I'm calling it Apples and Oranges. And the reason is because, well, I admit that I am in a quandary about this era of Pink Floyd that we've been covering, which is to say the post-Sid and pre-Dark Side part, Dark Side of the Moon. The story is that band leader Syd Barrett became uncontrollable due to excess use of psychedelics, so the rest of the band had to let him go, which meant that they had to fend for themselves. Well, up to this point, the post-Sid albums of Pink Floyd were, in my opinion, incredibly spotty and humorless. Yes, they started a new style that was distinctly their own, but the element of fun and the playful, childlike spirit of Sid was totally absent from their work without him. And if you listen to this series, the parts that were without Sid, you could just almost feel that dry darkness about them. So in 1970, the band members, primarily David Gilmour, reached out to help Sid record a solo record. And that album, Madcap Laughs, which I said was featured as episode 7 as a website-only entry into our How Music Changed series. So today's show is intended to display the blatant difference between Sid's perspective and that of the band without him. Now, granted, Sid's albums were virtually ignored by the record-buying public, and Pink Floyd were slowly becoming a mainstream band, which at this point, in retrospect, blows my mind, because in this episode, I'm going to be covering what I consider to be the best bits from two consecutive Pink Floyd albums, with the balance of the show filled out to be the best bits from Sid's second solo LP, simply called Barrett. So that's two Pink Floyd albums and one Syd Barrett album, which is his least effective album. And yet I've got more songs to play by Syd Barrett than I do by Pink Floyd. Two albums, and I've got three songs that I really feel the desire to play them, because the albums themselves just don't hold up. Now, I admit that I have a huge prejudice towards Sid's output at this point in time. But the fact is that, regardless of my own taste, Sid literally vanished from music at this point. So when this show is done, we're done talking about Sid, or at least about hearing any of his music. Because while Pink Floyd are now headed toward becoming one of the most remarkable bands in the history of rock and roll, after this show. But not yet. At this point, to quote a song written by Syd Barrett, we're going to compare apples and oranges. And we're going to do it with what I would call a Sid sandwich. Pink Floyd's going to be on top and at the bottom, and the middle bit is all going to be Sid Barrett. So, the first album, of which I'm only going to bother to play one song, is a soundtrack called Zabriskie Point. A really relatively dull album. Not that interesting at all. I played the entire thing through, and I would feel as though I would just be like, I can't really endorse this album. If you're a Pink Floyd fan and you care to hear it and you just wish to disagree, fine, please write me, tell me what you think. But this is not a place to go if you're beginning to get into Pink Floyd. I'm going to play one song from the soundtrack. It's called Crumbling Land. It's written by the band, and it's really the band almost sounding like they're trying to do some sort of like an American country thing, whether it's, I don't know, Hank Williams or something like that. It just seems absurd to me, but this is by far the most commercial song on the album Zabriskie Point. The whole thing is like maybe like a pastiche, maybe a little bit of the Birds or Crosby, Stills, and Nash also, as well as that. But it's a song called Crumbling Land. Here it is.
In a smile, I saw a single eagle in the sky. Something
right, that's going to be my only entry from the album, Zabriskie Point, which you can go deeper if you wish, of course. But considering how much music there is to come, I didn't want to waste too much time on the soundtrack albums that are mostly just incidental music anyway. Now, that album was released in April of 1970. So as it was being released, that gave David Gilmour and Richard Wright some time to maybe assist Syd Barrett in the studio with his second album. And what they wanted to do this time that was different from the first time is they really wanted to see if they could actually put a band behind Syd and record in like a normal way, which the first album sort of wasn't. It was all very segmenty. So they did. They got a drummer, Jerry Shirley, and David Gilmour and Richard Wright played their instruments, some bass and guitar and organ. And Syd played some guitar himself and did all the vocals, or just about all of the vocals. And they came up with some I just consider to be some of the most charming songs. And the track that opens it is a great example of just the intent and the space that David Gilmour and Richard Wright had given Syd, the sense of freedom. Here's the opening track from the album simply entitled Barrett. It's called Baby Lemonade.
Lemonade.
Now, that's compelling to me. I just find it, it's got so many different things happening on so many different levels. Keep in mind that Syd Barrett was the guitar player for Pink Floyd before David Gilmour. David Gilmour would not have been in the band if it weren't for the fact that they sacked Syd. But he and David were very close friends. So David's coming in and trying to help him come back from his, from the psychotic break that had caused him to have to leave the band. But all that guitar that you've heard on that is credited to Syd, not David, including the opening segments. In fact, what happened was David Gilmour had actually caught him playing that riff by himself, kind of like warming up. And he said, that's going to be a great intro. So he dropped it at the beginning of the song for Baby Lemonade. Now, of course, Syd is still very much a dreamer and also thinking about the past a lot, like he did when he was writing for Pink Floyd about his childhood days and everything. And this is a song about an ex-girlfriend that he really liked, and it's called Love Song.
I knew a girl and I like her still. She said she knew she would trust me, and I her will. I said, okay, baby, tell me what you be, and I'll lay my head down and see what I see. By the time she was back, by her open eyes, I knew that I was in for a big surprise.
Love Song, very simple. It seems, and it almost sounds as though it's coherent as well. Like it doesn't sound any stranger than the lyrics that he had written with Pink Floyd, if you ask me. And the next song was like a real, like some, like the band themselves was shocked by this. The song is called Gigolo Ant, which is a very, very funny idea for a lyric. And it's so Syd. And the band themselves were shocked, actually, when they were recording it, because they were really thinking that, you know, Syd was sometimes almost like he was frozen and couldn't even remember how to play a guitar. And then at other times, he would play brilliantly, and it just seemed so odd that he would just be able to be on and off like that. But on this song, Like the drummer, Jerry Shirley, said that Sid played his parts so correctly that I can remember that at the end of the take, we were flabbergasted. It's like we were thinking, you're not that nuts after all. You got through that take perfectly. And it's an amazingly fun and entertaining song. Here's Gigolo Ant by Sid Barrett.
Grooving around in a trench coat with the satin on trail. Seems to be all around it, din and dead pale, pale. Driving on down to the beach to see the blue and the grey. Seems to be all on its roses.
You know, at this point, you got to, like, climb into the head of Sid. Boom. How hard it must have been for him. He was the leader of Pink Floyd. It was his band. He wrote almost all of the songs on the first album. He wrote their singles, all of their hits in the beginning. And yet he is the guy that gets kicked out of the band. And now the band members are coming back and trying to help him recover. But Sid is also feeling incredibly alone. You could imagine, like, he was actually going into the studio and spying on the band sometimes while they were recording their albums. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was watching what they were doing and thinking to himself, "Oh, this is awful," because it was so far from what Sid was about. And that feeling of, I don't know, it was like, oh, there's a happiness to Sid's songs. And let's put it this way. There's a very strong sense of mood and purpose with what it is that he's doing that I think a lot of the Pink that vanished when he went away. Let me remind you that you listen to WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. This is the How Music Changed series. We do this every Friday, and we're in the midst of a series on Pink Floyd. We are right now around the 1970 era, and we are playing for the final time in this series the music of Sid Barrett, his last recordings that had anything to do with the band at all. And we'll play one more song, which was maybe one of the sadder songs, I think. You can almost feel that there's a sense of desperation in this one, I think. There was a song on his first album called Octopus, and it shares some of the lyrics with that. So I think that Sid did this almost spontaneously. And I say that also because at the end, he actually segues into a totally different song called I Never Lied to You. So it's really a segue of waving my arms in the air and I Never Lied to You, happening perhaps spontaneously.
Waving my arms in the air, not my love, got no care. No care, no, no. Pressing my feet to the ground. Stand upright where you stand. Call to you, and what do you do? Laying back in a chair. So high on the air, she's so high on the air. Half and half, half and half, all you have to do to call is hold her hand, stand a while and a smile, and we'll understand. Yes, we do, yes, yes, we do. Shouldn't try to be what you can't be. Call to you, and what do you do?
Bring Me Back. Oh, good. Okay. Did that the song just end like that? That's odd. Oh, well. You know what? Maybe it's because of the fact that it was maybe separated into two tracks, and I didn't realize that when I put it on the disc. So there goes the other half of I Never Lied to You. Sorry about that. All right, then we could pick up from there, though. That's fine. The next song up is actually a song that's sort of a memory song of Sid's about his time in Cambridge when he was dating a girl. And I think he spoke to somebody about it and said that it was he remembered a party in the summer that he never wanted to leave from the party that he was at. And he just decided to write a song about it, and it called it Wined and Dined. Wined and Dined by Sid Barrett. I'm only playing segments of this album because, like I said, I do want to get to back to Pink Floyd and cover some of their next studio album before we end the show. But there's one more song that I do want to play, and I find this astounding because this does not sound like something by somebody. And the rest of the songs, you can see through the cracks a little bit. You can see that Sid is definitely in a slightly different place than the average human being. And that's what, to me, makes the record so interesting and most very often charming, quite literally charming, sometimes a little bit scary. But this next one sounds so clever and well put together and that it, to me, it transcends most of what anything else that Pink Floyd had done up until this point in time without him. So this will be like the last part of the Sid sandwich. Then we'll get back to the Pink Floyd bread from this point out. But this is just a short little song, a ditty, I guess you could call it. It's called Effervescing Elephant.
an effervescing elephant with tiny eyes and great big trunk. One whispered to the tiny ear, the ear of one inferior, that by next June he'd die. Oh yeah, because the tiger would roam. The little one said, oh my goodness, I must stay at home. And every time I hear a growl, I'll know the tiger's on the prowl, and I'll be really safe, you know. The elephant, he told me so. Everyone was nervy, oh yeah, and the message was spread to zebra, mongoose, and the dirty hippopotamus, who wallowed in the mud and chewed his spicy hippoplankton food and tended to ignore the word, preferring to survey a herd of stupid water bison. Oh yeah, and all the jungle took fright and ran around for all the day and the night, but all in vain, because you see the tiger came and said, who, me? You know, I wouldn't hurt not one of you. I much prefer something to chew, and you're all too scant. Oh yeah, he ate the elephant.
All right, you know what? We have a little bit of time. I forgot how short that song was, so we can maybe drop in one more Sid song before we leave the bread. There was a song that I had scheduled to play, and I was worried about the time factor, but I think we're okay with it now. So let's play one more Sid song from that second album. This is the last we'll be hearing from him. It's a song called Rats.
Got his head down, got a knock inside his spine. Says that's love, yeah, 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 yeah. That's love, yeah, 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 yeah. Says that's love. All night, TV, deeply, peace feeling. That's love, yeah, 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 yeah. That's love, yeah, 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 yeah. The fall that brings me to, I like the fall that brings me to, like the cord around sinew, I make a cord around sinew, duck the weight and east is less, deep craving of the metal west, hell tomorrow's rain and test, hell tomorrow's rain and test, love an empty sun and guess, love an empty sun and guess, pimples dangerous and blessed. Statuette, seething wet, we meeting fleck, seething wet, we meeting fleck. Lines and winds and fib and half, a beach fair day, I give you half, beach fair day, I give you half. I look into your eyes and you bathe in the sun for you. Proxy, very smelly, cable, cable, splinter, channel, dot, the scene is taken off. Rats, rats, lay out flat. We don't need you, we act like that. If you think you're unloved, then we know about that. Rats, rats, lay down flat. Yes, 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 lay down flat.
All right, then, this brings us to Pink Floyd's official studio album at this point, after Piper at the Gates of Gedawn and Saucer Full of Secrets and Umma Gumma, which was the without Sid. This one, obviously, without Sid. And, of course, the band is still—the other albums were all dedicated to soundtracks for movies, which is part of the reason why they weren't really that interesting, to be honest. But this is now Adam Hart Mother. So in their discography, their fourth studio album, I believe. So at this point in time, there was a Scottish composer and arranger named Ron Geeson who got involved with the band. He had met them a couple of times in the 60s, and he was inducted into the band's circle by their tour manager, Sam Cutler, and he became friends with Nick Mason and his wife and Roger, and they played golf together and stuff like that. And he was a musician who was capable of like arranging, doing like classical arrangements of certain things like that. So they were trying to figure out what to do. But the band themselves at this point, without Sid, didn't even have like a notion of an idea about what to do. So as it says in the book, Pink Floyd's book, All the Songs, Geeson's presence was explained, however, by the fact that all four members of Pink Floyd were feeling somewhat jaded at this point in their career. As the Scotsman recounts in his own book called The Flaming Cow, it was obvious to me at that time that the group was getting close to running on empty. And Rick Wright confirms that their inspiration had waned. He says, "We did get into a lazy period. There was a point when we sat about not knowing what to do. That was before and during Adam Hart Mother. Geeson may have been the group's chosen solution." So what happened was, as Geeson puts it, "The band handed me this backing track, and I wrote out a score for a choir and brass players, sat in my studio in the unbelievably hot summer of 1970, and his work to their conglomeration or agglomeration of unfinished songs ended up becoming the title track, Adam Hart Mother. As it says, there was a danger that the group's new symphonic orientation would put off fans from the early years, those who had succumbed to the psychedelic fairyland charms of Sid's songs, like The Piper at the Gates of Dawn, or even the space rock vibe of Saucer Full of Secrets. But that's not what happened. The album actually went to number one in the UK, the very first time that that happened for Pink Floyd. I am astounded by that, because I find the album almost utterly unlistenable. Heidi and I were on a road trip just last weekend with me trying to, you know, which songs are we going to play? And I figured we have to play the title track. We're going to have to play it. It's the whole... It's the whole crux of the, and it is the entirety of side one, and it's 24 minutes long, and it's really 24 minutes of just subtle torture. It goes nowhere. Like Leonard Bernstein is quoted as saying when he heard it, he goes, "This is like the most boring thing I've ever listened to." And I'm sorry, but I agree with Leonard Bernstein. So I'm not going to try to like waste, I don't have 24 minutes. That's wasting half of our time of the show anyway, so I'm not going to go there. And even Roger, in retrospect, the group themselves would basically tear the album apart. Nick Mason said at one point that, well, we'd all wish we could do it again. We'd all, like, maybe re-record it, because it wasn't entirely successful. It was educational. Roger Waters, though, was the most blunt about it. His quote was, "If somebody said to me now, right, here's £1 million, go out and play Adam Hart Mother, I'd say, you must be effing joking. I'm not playing that rubbish." So if that's not going to happen for the band, then I don't see why I need to get into it now. It's easily available if you want to waste a half hour of your life. I'll just put it that way. And I'm just being blunt. The title is interesting because it was Geeson who basically, they didn't know what to call the album at all. And then Geeson just said they're looking at the Evening Standard, the daily paper in England. And he said, just flip through that. You'll find a title in there. So they did. And they came across an article headlined Adam Hart Mother Named, which was referring to Mrs. Constance Ladle, the first British woman to be fitted with a nuclear-powered heart pacemaker. So there you go. They eventually chose the cow in the field for a picture because they said that it was the most absolutely opposite of psychedelic thing that they could think of. Like, you know, what are we doing with a cow in a field? What does it have to do with anything? So that's why they went with that. But the song goes on for 24 minutes, and it basically doesn't go anywhere. It has something like 20 parts, but the tempos change. There's orchestration and there are choirs, but they just don't add up to anything at all. So Giessen, by the way, had carte blanche to do the whole thing the way that he wanted. So when the band got back, they were basically stuck with what it was. But nobody was happy. So how it went to number one is something that I can't explain. So we'll go to side two of the album, which consisted of a few other songs. And I think we've got time for two of them. The first one is a Roger Waters song called If. Somewhere, I think it's where he shows a little bit of despair and darkness about the situation with Sid, maybe, because it sounds like there's like a sense of a broken heart coming from Rogers on this song called If.
If I were a swan, I'd be gone. If I were a train, I'd be late. And if I were a good man, I'd talk with you more often than I do. Thank you.
have sworn I'd be gone. If I were to trade, I'd be late again. If I were a good man, I'd talk with you more often.
And with the time we've got left, I want to drop in one of the better songs written by Rick Wright. Might be the best song on the entire album, Adam Hart Mother. It's called Summer 68. Thanks, folks. Join us next week for the next episode of Pink Floyd, part 10, because we're going to have another one of those dropped on the website. We'll talk about it then. Take care.
We met.